Hey everybody, I'm Olivia.
And I'm Emily.
And welcome to Making Love and Growing Up.
Also known as McGlue.
No!
Yeah, it's a thing.
No, it's not a thing.
Yes, a thing.
No, it's not a thing.
Hey everybody, welcome to McGlue.
Okay. MLGU. I like to say MLGU, but if you want to say McGlue,
yeah,
it's fine.
Also, it's a podcast for people who like, you know, they get lonely, but they're also independent. But like, you're a feminist, but they want a partner to buy them stuff. Like, you hate everyone, but you want a group of girls to come to your house and drag you out like Emma Stone in La La Land. And you're like, oh my God, but like, what do I wear?
Okay. It's a podcast for people who like are interested in dating, but don't really know what's going on. They're really only interested in dating themselves because treat yourself. They're feminist, but want to boo and be a feminist too. There are people who think the concept of being single forever isn't actually crazy at all. And also for people who have all of their friends that are getting married or having babies and are in a relationship, and reconciling that is okay, bye, I guess. But also is a podcast for people who are in a relationship and are still like, okay, what is going on and why is everything not fixed now?
It's a podcast for you to figure out your moral and sexual ethics.
Areas.
Teach yourself how to do your own research, be your own person, and figure out what the F you believe in.
Yeah,
At least try to figure it out. Try, yeah.
We're trying.
That's basically what we're doing.
So when I say the word patriarchy, oh well.
Unclench your butthole.
I love my dad.
I like dude.
Freaking Google it.
Keep going. I'll shut up.
I'm trying to talk about Christian shame.
If you don't know who these people are,
I'm Emily.
And I'm Olivia.
You're like the vet.
And also the war.
Have you heard about that story of the girl that sat on a broom and died?
I was like 2 steps away from doing it.
Don't have sex with people you don't like.
Maybe you can flap it on and just get it on.
Can you imagine telling your daughter that?
Well, you shouldn't talk about that. That's bad.
Learning what like a sexual partner is, and learning what respect is, and learning what love is. It's a hard journey we're on.
Olivia and I basically talk about a lot of issues and topics, not even issues, fun stuff. And a lot of people don't want to listen to it. So we thought, why don't we just make our friends listen to us talk about these nasty, beautiful, fun, weird things that we find on the internet and share them with people.
Yeah. And for this first episode, we're actually asking the question, do you remember when you had the talk? I mean, like the sex talk. Do you remember that? And what was that like?
I was at recess, 8th grade, I think. Yeah. I was sitting on the bump. We called that. That was the sidewalk. And we used to, as a punishment, you sit on the bump and you watch everybody else play. It's a great, great tactic to just make kids experience shame as they watch everybody else burn calories and you just, you know, play.
And how old were you when you were conscious of kids burning calories and you weren't?
Oh my God. We know this. I went to Curves with my mom at age 9.
And we bonded over fact that we both went to Curves with our mom.
That our 40-year-old mothers took us to go work out with other 40-year-old moms.
At Curves,
where you like, if you don't know, it's like very easy intervals where you switch from box to machine and you all are in a circle and you stare at each other.
And you're 9 years old.
And you're 9 years old.
In your big t-shirt with your mom.
Yeah.
Sweating and very aware that you are a chubby kid.
Yeah, very aware. And people are like, you're so cute. Like, I wish my daughter would come with me. And it's like, oh, well, she plays soccer. So she doesn't need to be here.
Body image.
No, because she's got the image. You know what I'm saying? And I'm just sitting there in my new Adidas shorts and my legs are chafing and I was so sweaty and I had these like cone boobs, like, you know, like not yet droppage.
When did you get your first bra?
Oh, I'm probably 5th grade, like, but that's not a real bra. So
mine
I wore training bras.
Grade.
Yeah, I think
was nine.
You were nine. God, man, you had boobs, like real boobs.
Yes. No, no, they were pokey.
Anyways. Pokey boobs. Okay, yeah, yeah.
So you're sitting on the bunk.
Yeah, sitting on the bunk. I'm experiencing shame because I talk too much in class. And a buddy of mine. Okay, you're not buddies with guys in eighth grade.
A buddy of mine sitting next to
me. A buddy of mine, a guy that I
paps.
Yeah, he's sitting next to me, Tommy. And we somehow get in this debate on how many holes girls have, because this is what you talk about when you're in eighth grade. He said three. And I was like,
girls,
two. Girls have two. Guys, cool. Guys have two. Girls have two. And he was like, no, you have three. And I go, I'm a girl. I would know
if I had a third
hole. And he just looks at me and looks away.
Oh, my God.
I went home that day and found out I had a cave in my body.
What?
Oh, yeah. Called my vagina. Well, I had no idea.
Biologically correct. That's okay.
Right. I got my period kind of late, too.
I didn't.
Yeah.
Nice. We'll get into that later. Cool.
Other episodes. We're
not gonna get into that right now.
So, I mean, like, if Tommy, Ted, had to tell me that I had a hole in my body, obviously, that's also...
Wasn't sufficient.
Obviously, that's not a poetic way to talk about the vagina. Like, I should be like, a wealth of a well inside of my body.
I mean,
like,
it is.
Right? Yeah.
You're not
But
wrong.
Obviously, my health class did not do that great of a job.
Yes.
What about you?
What about me?
Yeah.
How did I receive the talk?
Yeah.
Well, okay. So, I developed very early.
Nine.
Like I said.
9 years
nine
old?
Nine was my first bra. 10 years old was when I got my period. But,
oh my God.
And talking about, because I was looking for this book, and I'll get to the book later, but because I was asking my mom questions about this book that she gave me to give me the talk, she was like, you were just asking questions. You were 6 years old and asking me, where did I come from? And she just sat me down on the couch and handed me this book called Where Did I Come From? Wow. And I didn't know what it was called until just recently, but we have the book here.
Oh my.
And I have not opened this book since I was on that couch that fateful day when I was between the ages of six
you
and eight.
You didn't read it? You didn't keep reading it?
I read it on the couch and was horrified.
You're a one-read
girl.
Because
this is what I remember of this book. Before even opening it, what I remember, chubby naked people in a bathtub. I specifically remember pubes and chubby naked people in a bathtub.
It's like Curves, but in a bathroom.
Right, but there's a guy there, and he has a penis.
Oh, there's no men allowed in Curves.
So what we have here, and where did it come from, and feel free to look it up. I'm sure you can find information. Oh my God. Okay,
what's happening?
The first page is, this book is all about you. Actually, I'll present it like they do in kindergarten.
Oh, wow, that's
this
a fat baby.
This book is all about you. Oh, they wrote this book because they asked some boys and girls your age, so this would be for me when I was six, where they thought they had come from. Because remember, kids get very, because some parents don't know how to approach it, which I researched a little bit about the talk and stuff. And nowadays they advise parents to be very honest with kids about where they come from rather than saying, the stork dropped me on the doorstep.
Oh,
or
yeah.
God placed you in a stomach one day and you came out.
Oh, you're laughing. You're looking. She's
sorry,
looking at
I found
more pages
the,
of the book.
I immediately turned to the bathtub photo.
Oh, my. The bathtub. Give it here. Oh, God. Oh, my God. That is a penis. Oh, my God. That is a... Wow, those are... She
breasts?
Has full breasts, and he has a...
They're playing with a boat in a bathtub.
And he is like, why are they so...
And look, you can see his butt in the mirror.
Why are they old? Like, why...
It's mommy and daddy, that's why.
I don't... Guys, oh, wow, that's a lot.
I was so young.
I'm touching myself. I'm holding my boobs. That's a safety thing. I'm just sitting here going like,
a perky set of breasts.
Oh, no, it's all the bra. Oh, what... Guys,
full body.
Okay, we can't look at this
full
book
nude.
Anymore.
I know we can't.
She's got such nice.
Look at her vagina.
Torso.
Wow, amazing.
She shaves on the bottom. Do you see
she
that?
Does,
she
yeah.
only has hair at the top. And that's what I like to do. Honestly, that's the way to go.
It seems dangerous.
Oh my
Have
God!
You ever
can
tried
we do
to
an
trim
episode
down there
on just like
and
how
just
you
clipped
shave
your labia a little bit? Anyways.
Oh my God. Okay, so I want to know. Because you had a Christian upbringing, did you create godlike answers for where did you come from, or were you genuinely curious and open to the answer?
I feel like the place that I got my education Christian-wise was in the church. In school, I'll tell you this story though. I went to a private Christian school until eighth grade. In sixth grade is when we had our sex education talk. Okay. And in that class, it was very biological. They separated the boys and the girls, and the girls are in there learning about their periods, their vaginas, the way they have a baby. And I remember boys were peeking in the windows, and all they were, they like had asked, like, what did they say to you? And then we're like, we're not telling you. And they were like, we saw a moose. We saw a moose.
Oh, stop.
And the moose is the, you know, the way the
vagina.
Not the vagina, the inside, the cervix and the ovaries. That yeah. They thought it looked like a moose, and we had to explain to them. We didn't explain to them, but they wanted us to explain what the moose was.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Truly.
I
think a part of me thought in the book of Genesis, if you take it as a literal interpretation of the creation story, at the time I thought I literally came from a man. Like
gotcha.
Adam, right?
Oh.
I came from Adam's rib, or I came from the dirt or something. I don't really remember what, like...
I think I was probably just more curious about, you know, God, maybe God's role in everything, and the then again also the scientific potentially. I was a curious kid. I don't know.
I'm
still a curious kid. That's for sure. But I think the shame, which we'll, you know, we both know about shame. I don't think that started to set in until like fifth grade or something.
And describe this shame, because right,
okay,
cause
this is important, and I think because I when I had to research this topic, I was finding out a lot that I didn't even know. But what I ended up finding was a lot of like advice, but also about like changing bodies, and I think this is where the shame might set in from the psychological impact a parent has on a child when their body is developing at a really young age. They're starting to like notice they have a vagina or a penis,
right,
and start to notice that like it feels good if you rub it on the couch
or on the bike
or
you
on
know?
The bike. Mine was an exercise ball.
Really? At Curves?
No. Oh God, could you imagine? Not at Curves. No, it was
and Switch. Or can I just stay on this one? Can I stay on this one?
Can I keep bouncing up and down on this one? No.
Lorianne is like, it's my turn.
I think at the time, up until maybe like, oh, I don't even know what grade I was in. I was probably in like fifth grade. I thought that once people got married, God would give them babies.
It was a little confusing. And then this rambunctious neighbor of mine that was a lot older than us was actually being like super crude at the time and was like, well, I'm gonna go have sex with my girlfriend and she's gonna get pregnant or something like that. And I straight up told him to his face. I was like, sex isn't how babies are made.
Well, this would be in 19, when I would have been in fourth grade, I would have been 10, so 1948. The talk I remember with my mother was mostly about menstruation, not sexual act or anything like that.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever had a talk like that either. We'd had, you know, the class at school, I think it was fourth grade, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was, you know, I don't know whether I brought it up or she brought it up or whatever. And my mother did not know that you would go through menopause. So I'm telling my mother.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
It's only very recently what I've noticed that they have integrated this into schools, which you looked up a little bit of the history of sex education being a part of...
Oh, yeah. Of schools.
Of like schools.
Right? Isn't that an interesting transition? We now enter into the progressive era, which was a period of widespread social activism and political reform across the United States and spanned from 1890s to 1920s.
Okay.
And the main objectives of the progressive movement was eliminating problems caused by industrialization, urbanization,
okay,
immigration, and political corruption.
Okay.
Okay. So something that's happening, what happens when we take a bunch of people,
mm-hmm,
put them together?
Mm-hmm.
Disease. Lots of disease. So
yes,
much to the point where it created the social hygiene movement because
oh,
they were thinking something has to be done. People
what?
Are having sex with each other and then we're not talking
it's
about
very
it.
Dirty.
Yeah, it's very dirty. Everyone's getting sick. We're poor. Like, so it got to the point
bad
where
news
we
bears.
They said we cannot not talk about this anymore because clearly people are dying of syphilis. You know what I'm saying?
People are dying.
People are dying. Venereal disease. diseases are terrible. Syphilis back then, without a pill,
your
brain gone.
Yes. Okay. So that's a problem.
Yeah. So now people are just getting STDs everywhere. Read it in the books, kids. Did you not read that part about Industrial Revolution?
I didn't read it in my history book.
Interesting. Were you just reading about how cars were coming together and the women were setting their bras on fire?
Woo-hoo!
Actually, I don't think that was till the 60s, really. All I know, social hygiene movement, educating people about diseases, what's going on with their bodies when they have sex with each other, and all of that is coming into a full fruition. I know it's going to skip forward, but it wasn't really until the 1960s where there was a wave of controversy over sex ed in the United States schools. So pretty much until then, they were kind of like in agreement. Like, yeah, let's educate them. Let's use science. Let's talk about the more technical aspects of it.
Right, exactly.
But in the 60s was kind of when like morals started coming into play of like, wait a minute, is this okay? And the goals of social hygiene and moral purity like activists eclipsed broader sexual health concerns in the public health arena. Their narrower goals were to prevent sexually transmitted infections, stamp out masturbation and prostitution, and limit sexual expression to marriage. Right? So now we have this more moralistic like stamp over the education.
Purity culture.
Yeah. Purity culture. Boom. Exactly. So that was started happening in the 1960s and 70s. And then what happened in the 80s? AIDS. Right? So AIDS comes out and no one knows where it's coming from, right? When people don't have an answer, they like to create millions of answers to protect themselves. So obviously there's going to be an extreme imbalance as a precaution. Right? So like if a parent is really terrified of their kid touching a hot stove, they might build a barrier between the kitchen and the living room. Sounds extreme. Why can't we just tell the kid not to touch the stove? You know, but you put them like away in another room.
Got it.
How do I feel about that analogy? I guess it's fine.
No, it's a good analogy because it shows it's a little extreme. You just, I mean, there's also learning by experience where the kid just touches the stove and gets burned.
Here's the thing. Once you get AIDS, actually, now. Oh, did you get AIDS? Oh, well, just stay in the living room next time.
Lesson learned.
Next time, don't get the AIDS. Some people took advantage of the opportunity to push abstinence only.
Yes.
Which really what it was is just like not using protection and when it comes down to it, if you want to live a promiscuous sexual lifestyle, condoms are the
essential.
And I'm here to make condoms sexy. When are we getting merch? Condom merch.
Ooh.
Condoms can be super sexy. We should talk about this forever.
Sexy condoms.
Yeah, sexy condoms. I'm going to get a hat and it says make condoms great again.
Like,
okay. Yeah.
Okay.
It's going to be hot pink. So this leads to kind of in the 1980s, two theories emerged. The educational goals were divided. This is where I think you and I fell on one side or the other. There's two theories that developed. One was based on the belief that medically accurate and comprehensive information about sexual health would decrease risk-taking behaviors among young people. And the latter was based on the erroneous belief that medically accurate, comprehensive information would increase risk-taking behaviors among young people. This introduces something very interesting. Right? It's a theory. Withhold the information from the child, less likely to rebel. Give the information.
Ignorance is bliss.
Ignorance is bliss. Give the information to the child, and then they will be less likely to rebel.
Mm-hmm.
So, right? So sometimes it's very easy to be, I would say my parents withheld, and it's really easy for me to be bitter about that. But I also have to remember it was based on a theory. It was based on good intention to prevent me from taking risks. Did I take more risks because of the less I knew? I would say I took a lot of risks.
Okay.
But who knows? Maybe if I had the information, would have I taken less risks? It's all theory. And this is all what we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
Theory. So being aware of that and like in your own life also, kind of, do you think when you have knowledge about a subject, does it make you feel stronger? Does it make you feel like you can make better decision making going forward? Or do you wish you didn't know? In 2009, the Obama administration transferred funds from the community-based abstinence education program and budgeted $190 million in the new funding for two new sex education initiatives, the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Program and the Personal Responsibility Education Program. This was the first time federal monies were appropriated for more comprehensive sex education programs. And that was in 2009.
Wow. This is, I did not know that.
Right? And then in January 2012, there was the Future of Sex Education Initiative was published. And this gave, like, basically a whole curriculum for teachers to help them present sexual development as a normal, natural, healthy part of human development that should be a part of every health education curriculum and provide a clear rationale for teaching sexuality education and skills at different grade levels that is evidence-informed, age-appropriate, and theory-driven.
Wow.
What I like about these sexual education theories that say give the child knowledge or the adult or the young adult and they're going to have less risky behavior. What I like about these programs is sex is not just scientific or about biology or whatever. It's also about the person's personality, character, age, being age appropriate. And it's about the emotional responsibility too that we carry of, and that's what I'm going to, maybe I'll praise the more conservatives for really taking on the emotional responsibility mm-hmm. that yeah. sex carries that yeah. I think a lot of my friends don't have. Okay. The ones that were yeah. all taught full blown, like sex is cool, like be safe, here's a condom don't on a banana. It. Maybe they missed out a little bit on the emotional responsibility.
And the weight that yeah. sex can carry.
And the weight that sex can carry. So maybe there really is positive things that we can draw from both sides, both theories that emerged in the 80s and putting them together. Like the yeah. fact that a lot of my friends don't know, who are very like sex positive, blah, blah, blah. They don't know that there's over 170 strains of HPV and that multiple strains can give you cancer and that HPV is a skin to skin contact thing that could even be transferred with the use of condoms because guess what? It doesn't cover all the skin, right? A lot of people
you
don't
have to
know.
Wear like a latex bodysuit.
Exactly,
really
which I have Googled. So some people even who receive like the best sex ed don't even know that. P.S. You can get a great HPV vaccine from your local doctor, Planned Parenthood, or anywhere for free. It's great. Three shots separated. Let's not get cancer. Anyway.
Don't want it.
Don't want it. Don't want it.
Don't want it.
A guy invited me over at 3 a.m. the other day, and I was like, you might give me cancer. Mm. So no.
So no. No. That's a good way to think
about it. Also, 3 a.m., I'm sleeping.
Very simple little book, but it told everything you need to know about sex. I brought it home and I said, I'm 19 years old and I'm going to get married in 2 weeks. And I said, show that to my mother. I said, I forget the girl's name. I said, so-and-so's priest gave her this and she loaned it to me. My mother made me take it back.
Oh.
Said I didn't need all that instruction. She just barely looked at it like it was pornography.
Oh, no.
And my mother was not a saint. What did she think I was going to do?
Oh, boy. Where I heard the phrase, the talk, quote unquote, was probably like more in cartoons or movies. Because like, I don't really feel like I had that. Maybe a bit of it in school. You know, sort of this, I specifically remember a day when we were told like that the girls were going to go do something and the guys were going to do something else. And the guys were basically looked upon and we did some other activity. It had nothing to do with sex ed and the girls went and had their like conversation. It was probably in like fourth grade or something. And it wasn't until like next year that this time of year came around again that the guys were like brought into a room where we actually talked about sexuality in a very medical way. So that was like fifth grade. And then in sixth grade, the guys were brought into a room and it was talked about in a slightly more sexual way, but it's still very medical. And then it was never addressed again. That was like the education I had. I think I brought it up to my mom, and I think the only thing I was told from her in a really awkward short conversation was like, when a man and woman love each other, they get really close. And it was like something to that, and nothing like against her. I think she just wasn't expecting it, but that was the talk, I guess. And so for me, being the curious person I am, I like probably I don't think I Googled things at that time, but there was actually a radio station that, and this was probably junior high, that I started listening to like 9 p.m. to like 11 or something.
Yeah.
And I had a radio that was a tape recorder and stuff by my bed, and I would like turn it on as low as the volume could possibly go, almost like just so it's right next to my head and I could listen in on the show, because I realized they talk about sex like in detail with people calling in with their issues.
Yeah.
And I listened to that literally every night for like 2 years in junior high, because I think I started hearing about sex from like, heard sexual things from other guys at school and was curious about it more and more, and I wanted to know, so I found that as my like way to learn.
How do you think like either the lack of information, so you weren't given enough information, or the surplus of information you were given from society, how do you think that affected your sexual ethic growing up? And potentially what impact it has on you today, if that's not too personal of a question.
Oh my God. Personal? What? Man, my heart is beating so fast. I mean, because, right, the problem in high school was not necessarily my sex education. It was insecurity. And that's such a deeper root.
Me too.
Right? I mean, I remember...
And I'm on the other end of the spectrum, and me too.
Right. Yeah. Right. I don't even know what that means.
Sorry. What I mean by that is I wasn't having sex at all. I wasn't even kissing. I wasn't even touching boys. But and I had so much crippling insecurity.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. I think for a very long time, I very much wanted to wait. And, but I was a very outgoing girl in high school, and I drank a lot with the boys, and I loved kissing. I'm such a romantic. But it just seemed every time I kissed, the boys wanted to keep going, and I didn't really know that realm. I was very afraid of, I didn't know what to do with a penis. I didn't know what, I was so insecure of them knowing that I was such a virgin. Like I always remember pretending in high school that I wasn't like a virgin, like that I knew. Like I'd walk into a room and I'd be like, oh my God, it smells like sex in here, which is a line from Ashton Kutcher's Butterfly Effect movie.
Oh,
I would
my
always
God.
Say, oh my God, it smells like sex. And then one time my friend was like, Emily, you've never even had sex. And I'm like, I've seen the Ashton Kutcher movie.
I know what it smells like.
Yeah. So I was very good, like pretending to be like cool girl, fun girl. And, but the thing was, is when boys would try to do stuff, I didn't really like know how to handle it. You know, I'd freeze. All I knew how to do was say no. And sometimes I'd be like, you have a girlfriend. That's like all I could get out. But I wouldn't say things like, I'm not ready. Like I would never, it would just be like, no, no. And then I'd feel this shame that like I was such a prude and I was so uncool. And like, and they would usually shut off like pretty quickly, and then they would never want to talk to me. So I very much associated with, if you are a prude, hot guys will not want you. Which I think is definitely streamed into my life now, of like, now that I do participate in like sexual expression like a lot, it's very much like, oh, now I can get all the guys I want, because all I have to do is say yes.
Yeah.
Like if I want your full attention, if I want all the love that I didn't get from those like football players and wrestlers in high school, all I have to do is say yes, and I'll give you a great time. You know what I'm saying? So it's like all my wildest dreams came true. All I had to do is say yes. But now I'm in the situation of, I think I say yes too much. I'm like not giving it away, but I am participating in this, in sex with guys that I don't necessarily want to have sex with. But because I went on the other extreme of like, well, once I had sex, might as well just keep having it.
Now I can get all the hot guys I want.
Now I can get you if I want. I'll show you that I'm not prude. I'll show you that I'm cool.
Ah.
I'll show you. So it's like a power tool. Whereas like now I want to be like, no, I don't want to, dude. It's not like, oh, I don't want to have sex. It's like, I don't want to have sex with you. But I was never taught that. I was never taught like, of you can choose who you do this with, like, or like love yourself, and like only I just was taught no so hard. I have no idea. I had no idea how to conduct sexuality outside of marriage. What's so sad is like the first time I had sex, I didn't acknowledge that I was taking advantage of until a year later, because nobody told me that a gentleman should ask to use a condom, that a gentleman should ask to come inside of you, that a gentleman should like blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. I didn't know the rules of sex, how things are conducted, what safe sex should look like. I just thought, if it's outside of marriage, it's going to be bad. And my heart hardened so hard after that, because I was just like, I had sex. That's what sex is. And it was like, no, that's not what sex is. That's what abuse is. Mm-hmm. I think at the end of the day, I wish I had the words and the knowledge for what was happening to me.
Yes.
And that's what brings me here. So my theory is that if you give a child the words, they will be able to detect abuse. Wow. So I think that sexual information, the right to, you know, that they have to their body that's being done to them, things that will stay with them forever, right? Like, I want children to be able to properly communicate what someone did to them, what they touched. If they don't know what's going on, they're just going to have this terrible ache inside.
Mm, it's just going to feel so wrong. And they're not going to be able to articulate that.
Right.
Yeah. Because then your parents have to decide. Your parents have to have that discussion amongst themselves. Or if it's like a single mom or a single dad or whatever, they have to think, how do I want to talk about this with my child? Do I want to shelter them so that they don't have any sort of a stolen innocence, if you will? Will their innocence be stolen if I tell them about sex? Are they going to lose, like, the childhood wonder?
That's interesting. Knowledge. Knowledge could take your innocence away.
Yeah, well, when I was looking up advice on, sites that give parents advice for, educating your kids, a lot of the questions parents would ask is this going to steal my child's innocence if I start to tell them about this stuff? And how far do I tell them, you know? And so it lands in the parent's lap at some point. You know, schools do as much as they can. And also, too, in more modern day, the debate right now, because there are new federal laws regulating, education in schools for kids, parents on Facebook, moms on Facebook,
love it,
are sharing different sites of different opinions on this comprehensive, because some say it's too comprehensive, the education that they want to give to kids. And there are some, like, not misnomers, but there's like misinformation about what exactly the schools are, like, federally, what they need to tell kids. So, because some moms literally think that, like, kids are being shown porn, basically, like, the books are, like, showing them sex acts, is what my mom keeps talking about, how they're showing them sex acts, and these kids are so young, and how could you show kids, like, the actual pictures of, like, a penis going in, you know? So there's debate on what's too much information, since we now have to give information to kids.
Right.
And what do I do if I don't want my kid to know that, you know? Like, is it too much information?
I have a question for you. Let's ask ourselves this. What do you think the ratio is of how many parents presented the concept of death to their kids before something? Sex? Talk about stealing your kid's innocence. Dying steals everything. You're done.
Like, sorry, you're only on this earth for about, like, 85 to 100 years, if you're lucky. Right. And then you're gone.
Right.
And
so
figure
out
what happens after
that.
So
why would we tell a kid about, like... Like, why are we comfortable telling a kid about death? Like, yeah, that's a hard thing, but we're pretty straight up. Like, yeah, we'll say things like, oh, Spot went to dog heaven.
Right, that's the thing, too, is what I was talking about before, is, like, parents like to fudge things to hopefully save kids' innocence. It went to a doggy park in South America, when really...
But eventually that kid at, like, fourth grade learns that what death really is.
You might find that when you Google how to give advice to your kid. What you also might find when you try to give advice to your kid is a pediatrician's perspective on how to give advice to your child, which is, I found to be, like, the freaking coolest thing. A lot of it is, like, psychologist opinion, child development specialist opinions on, you know, the right way to approach this potentially very shameful topic. That can affect a child's psyche later on. I experience, from things I don't even remember, you know? So they have on, what is it? This is healthychildren.org. So if you want to get the full list, please go there. It's literally called, the page is called Talking to Your Child About Sex. And the first one, which is really cool, the first bullet is Don't Discredit Love. So, like, even in this pediatrician's talk, it's, It says, understand the importance of romantic attachments in a teenager's life and the intensely strong feelings that they guarantee, even if your definition and perspective of love differ from your child's. Aww. So they're talking already from the first bit about emotional attachment and, you know, love. Like, love is real. Love is a thing that happens. And you don't need to discredit that when talking to your kid about sex. You don't need to, like, and actually it's more encouraged to talk about, like, love and having sex when you're in love or whatever it is. Or, you know, not saying that's the only way you can have pleasure, but, like, love is a piece of the picture in sex. Like, we don't have to not talk about it. We don't have to, like, forcefully talk about it, like, that it needs to be in love. But love is part of the equation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Love gives you more peace of mind and a trust with your partner, and your body literally can climax better when you are relaxed. It's really hard to be relaxed when you, like, forget the guy's name and you're, like, four margaritas in and his apartment smells weird.
Oh,
like,
my.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not about, like, sex out of marriage. That's, like, I don't even trust this person. That's just about trust alone. We could even not be having sex. We could just be sitting in his room and I'd be like, I don't want to be here. You know, so it's really interesting when we start crossing, like, could sex be more pleasurable within marriage? Does that marriage include love and safety and security and promises?
Yeah, that's what we were told as kids.
That sounds amazing. That's what we were told as kids.
Well, that's what we were told, what marriage automatically brings. And we learn later that that's not true
and
either.
can you have love? Can you have... So if love, trust, security, or what is
safety.
Security? Safety. I think it's really trust. Because we don't have the security of forever. We don't know what is forever.
Right.
So the trust and love and respect... If that can exist with outside of marriage, I fucking believe that you're going to experience that same pleasure.
Yeah, and especially if you're, like, mentally connected with someone, you're emotionally connected with someone, you care about someone despite their flaws and in light of their good traits or whatever, that's like, I mean, it's like a good friend. Like, if you're hanging out with a good friend, that's going to be better than hanging out with a stranger, potentially, you know? So,
100%.
Like, so that crosses the line of all relationships of, like, how love can enhance. I'm not going to go through all the bullets, but another one that's good is avoid sexuality conversations that are all don'ts. So, like, don't do this, don't do that, don't. Avoid that. And, you know, potentially give them some do's. Like, what should you do? Like, what's a do in this situation? Rather than just all negative, 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 don't. And you're not giving them any place to land, really, other than just an abstinence. Don't even think, don't even touch, don't even talk, whatever. Give them some do's. Be real with your children. Oh my God. Empower your children. Let them know they deserve to feel honored in their relationships, to have their own space, to keep their friends, to include their family, and to feel good about who they are. Teach them to expect a give and take, but that in the end, a good relationship helps you to be more of who you are already and feel even better about it.
Whoa.
I know, right? It's so, so fucking dope. Positive expectations, live by example, you know, listen more than you talk. Like, listen to your kid more than you talk to your kid. Like, talk at your kid. Like, listen to the things that they're saying. Don't ask too many questions or you won't get any information at all. You know, oh, and adolescence is for practice. The teenage years are great for learning about relationships. What is the difference between a crush and real love, between a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and a friend who is a boy or a girl? You know, what belongs on Facebook and what doesn't? Stuff like that, where it's like all of these things get really into, you know, the intricacies of not only like the biology, but also the psychology, the mental health, the what's a good relationship. This digs in really deep to holistic health perspective on sex education for your children, from parents to a kid. So yeah,
well, basically that really sums it up.
I think this process of us going into these topics and exploring and trying to figure it out is going to be really good for us and good for other people, which I want to hear from people as well other than us outside of the circle about their experiences. So you out there, if you're out there, if you can hear me, I want to hear about what people are going through too. I think this is how we grow, which is growing up, making love and growing up.
Boom.
McGlue.
McGlue, dang it.
And with that,
MLGU.
Get out there, make some love, and let's grow up.
Let's grow the fuck up. I don't know. That's too harsh.
See you next time.